Mr. Goller.
Morning. May it please the court and counsel, my name is Michael Goller and I represent Theodore Rolfs and his wife Judith Gallagher, who for simplicity I will refer to as the Rolfs. Your Honors, the issues in this case are twofold. There are two key issues in this case. First, what is the correct valuation method to value the house the Rolfs donated to the Chiniqua Fire Department? And second, did the Rolfs retain an interest in that house in violation of the partial interest rule contained in Internal Revenue Code Section 170 sub F sub 3? First, with regard to value, the Rolfs expert witness, Mr. Richard Larkin, who I might point out was the only expert to testify in this case who was qualified to value real estate in addition to real estate, used what's called the before-after method to value the donated house. This method measured the value of the land and the house, the before value, and then measured the value of the land after the donation, the after value. The difference between the before and the after is, of course, the value of the donated home under this method.
Was there any evidence before the tax court that a willing buyer would pay $76,000 for a house that he would have to burn down in 2 months?
Your Honor, the before-after valuation method is an attempt to put forward just that.
It doesn't actually do that.
No,
would you agree there's no evidence that a willing buyer would have been willing to pay $76,000 for the privilege of burning down this house?
There is no evidence that a willing buyer would do that, or that a buyer, not that necessarily the hypothetical willing buyer, but that, that a buyer would pay that, because there is no market for a house that's been donated to a fire department
Precisely.
To be burned down.
Why does the before and after method look at the property the plaintiffs retain rather than the value of the property that they donated?
Because the mechanics of the test is to back into, of the valuation method, is to back into the donated property because it's used in cases where there is no market for the donated property. Conservation easements are the classic example, but it's also used in other cases. The point is, when there's no market for a property, for all worthless property, there is no market. But all property for which there is no market does not necessarily mean it's worthless.
Let me ask you about a hypothetical that's a little different from the ones that have been talked about so far. Suppose the Rolfs just gave the fire department the use of the lake house for a summer. Okay?
Okay.
I assume there would be a rental value on lake houses in that neighborhood that you could determine.
Absolutely.
Okay. The fire department could use it any way they wanted, right?
Correct.
I assume that value would also be much less than $76,000.
I would assume that would be the case, yes.
Okay. What we have here is, in essence, I would suggest, comparable to a rental, except that it's not during the holiday season or the vacation season. It's got about a 2 or 3 month time limit on it. It can be used only for training, and it's got to be burned down at the end of it, right? So I would think with all those additional restrictions, the value of that rental would be considerably less than the value of one summer's rental.
I think, Your Honor, though, the key point that you mentioned is that the house is to be burned down at the end. Both the fire department, the donee, and the Rolfs wanted the house burned down. Unlike a rental, which I don't think you would get a deduction for a rental, generally speaking,
no.
But unlike a rental, the fire department was allowed to consume the house in its entirety, which has value. The home has value. The question becomes, how do we value a home when there is no market for that home? And virtually any time we donate property, for example, the example I put in my brief about a grocer donates a truckload of turkeys.
There actually is a market for burning things down. The fire department apparently would have to engage in some training exercise periodically. The alternative is to pay some company that specializes in providing training exercises. And that might include burning a structure down. Do we know how much the fire department would have had to pay for that exercise in the market?
We know that the fire department does pay the local community college for the use of their burn tower, and they train there. Because we've created...
Do we know how much they pay?
That's not in the record, Your Honor. We don't know.
how much they pay.
That might be an interesting comparison so that we could figure out the market value of a training exercise, because that's what they were getting.
One reason why this is probably not in the record, Your Honor, is the local community college is subsidized by the state as well. So that when the fire department pays for training at the local community college, the amount they pay, something more than zero, for what the fire chief testified to be as inferior training, but they still pay it, that is subsidized to some extent by the state.
But it's a real data point. Let's see. If I recall correctly, the evidence shows here that the fire department was willing to take this house only if the Rolfs also made a $1,000 cash contribution, correct?
That's correct. The Rolfs made a $1,000 contribution to cover the department's costs in burning the house down.
That sounds a lot like less like a gift than a discounted demolition contract for $1,000. Yeah.
The $1,000, and again, the record is silent on whether the Rolfs deducted that amount or not. They clearly deducted $76,000.
It was in cash. It's easier to deduct cash gifts, right? But you understand what I'm saying about this sounding like just discount demolition?
Well, I understand your point. That they, in fact, there's no doubt that the Rolfs wanted the house burned down. There's no question about that. It was burned down. The issue becomes, how do we value a property that has no ready market for it? And in the case of, for example, a conservation easement, we do look to the before-after test. And the IRS regulations say, and Congress has said, someday if there are markets for conservation easements, we will look to some different valuation method. But until that's the case, the before-after valuation method is the best method to value something like that. And the same is true for our property with the Rolfs House.
The problem that I have with that theory, counsel, is that with the conservation easement, it is the restriction itself that on the gift, the restriction on the use of the donor's property that we're trying to measure, right? In this case, the before and after method seems completely to ignore the restrictions that the Rolfs imposed on the use of the property.
And that was the point of the tax court, Your Honor, which I think is incorrect. When you look at the mechanics of the before and after test, the restriction on the donated property is reflected in the after value. And in my brief, I changed the various restrictions, and you can see the after value changes. As the after value changes, it goes up or down. That is designed to measure the restrictions on the donated property. For example, one of the examples I mentioned is, what if the Rolfs had said, you don't have to burn the house down for 10 years or 15 years? That would depress the value of the underlying real estate, because who would want to buy it, because they couldn't use it for 10 or 15 years. And if that depressed the value of the real estate, the value of the donation would go up. So the before-after valuation method is designed to capture the restrictions that are on the subject property. And candidly,
the problem is that I don't see how that follows. And if this were a 15-year period, that would increase the cost to the Rolfs of making this donation without increasing the value of the donation. Suppose the terms of the donation were to the fire department, you cannot get near the house for 15 years, and then on the 15th anniversary you have to burn it down the next day. The value of that donation to the fire department isn't greater as a result of the 15-year wait, it's less. You have to discount the value of the training exercise to present value by discounting it for 15 years. Now, you've suggested a method of valuation that increases the value when we know that the value to the donee is down. And this suggests there's something wrong with your valuation method.
Well, but Your Honor, if I could point out, in the example you just focused on, you looked to the value to the donee. And the fact of the matter is that the willing buyer, willing seller test does not look to the value to the donee.
Certainly it does. The fire department will pay less for a house that it can burn down in 15 years than for a house that it can burn down tomorrow. That's perfectly straightforward.
I understand your point, Your Honor.
I would also submit that in Judge Easterbrook's hypothetical, the donors retain much greater value because they can continue to use the house for 15 years.
Again, in that situation, the donor would have access to the house in that situation. If the facts change a little bit, though, and the donee has access to the house, remember, in our situation, Rolfs did not have access to the house. Once the donation was made, the fire department said, please don't go on this property anymore. We have safety concerns. But if in the situation, your exact example, where the fire department could actually have access to the house, in other words, an easement went with the donation, that would greatly increase the value to the donee. The point I'm making, Your Honors, is when we look at the valuation method, the before-after valuation method, it's intended to capture restrictions placed on the donated property. And the only qualified valuation expert to testify in this case, Richard Larkin, knew the restrictions on the property and found that this was the appropriate method to measure the improvement, the house. I'd also like to say a few words about the IRS's other argument, which, unless there's any questions on the valuation method. The other argument is that the donation runs afoul of the partial interest rule under Code Section 170 sub F sub 3. And the IRS puts forth two theories. One, that the donation is the mere use of the home and not a donation of the home. And two, that the Rolfs retained rights in the home. And I think both those theories are flawed. First, the use argument is nothing more than a play on words. Charities always use property that's given to them. If I give clothing to a charity, to help hurricane victims, that charity will use that property. In our case, the fire department was given the absolute right to consume the entire property. That's more than the use of the property. Regarding the mechanics of the partial interest rule, it's well settled that that rule applies when the donor retains a valuable interest or an interest that interferes with the donee's intended use of the property. Well, in this case, if the Rolfs did retain an interest, it certainly wasn't a value. They certainly didn't keep anything that anyone would pay any money for. And the donee, the fire department, got to use the property for exactly what it wanted to do with the property, which is burn it down. So 170 sub F sub 3, the partial interest rule under that section, cannot apply to our case. So in summary, the before-after valuation method, which the tax court rejected because it found that it did not measure the restrictions on the donated property, that method is an appropriate method and is a correct method to value the donated home. And the Rolfs did not retain a partial interest in the property. As such, the $76,000 tax deduction that they took on their 1998 tax return should be respected.
What was the basis for the Rolfs' claim of the $235,000 replacement value when they were litigating in this tax court?
The $235,000 replacement value is the replacement value of the property without subtracting the depreciated value of the property.
Right.
What
conceivable basis was that claim made in the tax court?
That, quite frankly, I made the claim and I regret making it. I think that a better claim would be the 200 some odd thousand less the depreciated value, which arrives at an approximate value of $70,000, and that's why we're not arguing that issue on appeal. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
Certainly, Counsel. Mr. Whale.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Stephen Awagio from the Department of Justice, appearing on behalf of the appellee, Commissioner of Internal Revenue. Taxpayers were not entitled to a charitable contribution deduction, both because they failed to demonstrate that the value of the property donated exceeded the value of the benefit they received, and because they transferred less than their entire interest in the property. The value of the property donated simply did not exceed the value of the benefit taxpayers received. Taxpayers transferred the house subject to three restrictions. The house could not remain on the land, it could only be used for training purposes, and it could only be used for a limited period of time. As the tax court correctly concluded, those restrictions rendered the house virtually worthless. Both in the tax court and on appeal, taxpayers argued that the before and after method should be used to value the house. That method, however, failed to account for the restrictions imposed in the house. Indeed, as the tax court acknowledged, application of the before and after method in this case assumed that the house could remain on the land and that it could be used as a house. That's not, in fact, what taxpayers transferred to the fire department. The tax court also correctly concluded that taxpayers received the benefit of at least $10,000 by having the fire department demolish the house. Taxpayers testified that it would cost between $10,000 and $15,000 to demolish the house. Sokol similarly testified that it would cost between $10,000 and $12,000, and George testified that it would cost approximately $10,000 to demolish the house. Because taxpayers failed to demonstrate that the value of the property donated exceeded the benefit they received, they were not entitled to a charitable contribution deduction under Section 170. Taxpayers are also precluded from claiming a charitable contribution deduction because they transferred less than their entire interest in the house. Taxpayers may generally not claim a charitable contribution deduction when they transfer less than their entire interest in property. The Code specifically provides that donating the use of property is treated as less than entire interest. Here, taxpayers transferred only the use of the house to the fire department. This is evidenced by Chief Wazorik's testimony, in which he stated that he was given the exclusive use of the home for training purposes.
What interest did the owners retain in the house?
Your Honor, prior to the transfer, taxpayers could use the house for whatever purpose they wanted for as long as they wanted.
They were the fee simple owners.
That's correct,
After
Your Honor.
After they made the donation, what was left?
They retained the control to dictate how the fire department used the house. They said, you know, you can use a house. The house cannot remain on the land. You can use it for training purposes, and you can only use it for a limited period of time. If, for example,
the donation had been, the house is donated to the fire department, provided that the fire department sends a house mover to take it away physically, lock, stock, and barrel. Would you be arguing that the taxpayers retained any interest in the house?
No, Your Honor. I guess that wouldn't be the...
How is this any different from donating it on condition that a house mover haul it away? This is donating it on condition that it be turned into a pile of rubble.
Yes, Your Honor. I guess the difference would be if the fire department didn't go through with its plan to burn down the house initially, taxpayers presumably, because they wanted to construct a new house on the premises, would have ejected the fire department and saying,
That would be identical if you donated on condition that they send a house mover to haul it away. If that fire department doesn't fulfill its part of the promise, they will be ejected.
That's true. I suppose that's true, Your Honor. Moreover, the taxpayers are also not entitled to, as I was mentioning, Chief Wazorik specifically testified that he was given the exclusive use of the property, and in his correspondence subsequent to the transfer, he noted that it was the use of the home that was given to the fire department. If the court has no further questions in terms of either the quid pro quo argument or the partial interest rule.
Let me just ask you a simple question. Suppose these folks are church members and decide to let the church host a retreat at their lake house for the weekend. Can they deduct the rental value of the house for the weekend?
No, Your Honor. That would be violative of the partial interest
rule. That's the partial interest
rule. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I'm frankly concerned that, at least as far as I can tell, the actual application of this partial interest rule is a little less clear cut than the statutory language might indicate.
And yes, Your Honor, and
that's my concern about that argument. So,
as a practical matter, it's probably easier to approach this case from a partial interest rule standpoint, just as a matter of. Practically approaching the case, but there aren't many cases interpreting that rule, Your Honor.
Counsel, it seems to me all three appraisals are not based on reality. These people lived in this house for, several years, enjoyed the lake, enjoyed the house, but yet it has no value because of the desire to demolish it.
Well, yes, Your Honor. The valuation methods are not necessarily identical to the facts of the case because what taxpayers didn't want the house. They didn't want it on their property. They wanted to demolish the house, to build a new house so that they could exchange a house with Beatrix Gallagher in this case.
So the IRS just says because you want to demolish the house, it no longer has value.
I'm sorry. I don't... understand
it's
their
because
question.
Of the desire to demolish that the house no longer has any value.
Yes, Your Honor. Essentially because to the taxpayers, the house didn't have any value. They didn't want it on the property. There was also no market for the house. Therefore, it didn't have any value. If the court has no further questions, the commissioner rests on his brief and asks this court to affirm the decision of the tax court.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Galler? No, that's guaranteed.
The flaw in the IRS's reasoning is the item that was just brought out, which is the position that because the taxpayer wants to destroy the property, it must have no value. That would mean that at any time anyone ever gives any property that has any restriction on it at all, it has no value. I give cash to the local university.
No, that's not true.
But it would be unmarketable. If I give cash, for example, to the local university and say,
you give somebody a property subject to an easement that allows you to walk across it to reach the rest of your property. There are plain market values for houses subject to easements and so on.
I should clarify my point.
You don't help your argument by making absurd contentions.
I should clarify my point. When donors give something and they put a restriction on that property, often that property becomes unmarketable. For example, if I give cash to say, please build a building, local university, you must use this cash to build this building. Nobody else wants that cash now. It's unmarketable. That doesn't mean, though, that the donation lacks value. And simply because the Rolfs had a desire that the house be burned down doesn't mean the house lacks value. If there are any other questions, I'm happy to entertain them.
I don't think so. Thank you very much, counsel.